We're live. Let's do it.
All right.
This is it.
Okay.
I was thinking, how could we start? So people who, because in the UK, you're pretty well known and people know your kind of background. But for people who don't know, I was thinking, how could we start? So really put set you up. So I thought, tell me about you and your brother when you first started getting into, how did that happen? How did you get into mountain biking? I'm guessing your brother led you in.
Is this, we started now, have we? Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Blimey. Yeah. Let's go right back to the start. So, yeah. Quick introduction. My name's Chopper Fielder, and I ride mountain bikes. And I'm probably from the free ride. Well, I am from the free rides and dirt jump scene.
Believe
in
yourself.
The UK.
You are.
I am from the free ride and dirt jump scene in the UK. But let's go way back. Let's go back to the start. So I was at school, really sporty, well into football, fishing, golf, everything but bikes.
Right.
Which is quite funny. Like, I was into skating, one-footed roller booting as well, which I enjoyed.
Because you could do... You know what? Secret, right?
Yeah.
I used to do roller booting. Don't tell anybody. I did. I used to love it. Steve Bear got me into it.
Did you have Bauer or Graffs? Because they were the only two.
I had Bauer. Yeah. But I didn't have
how to
sort say
of
it.
Ice skate.
And I just needed... Bauer? I needed them ones with them kind of like plastic ankle hinges on them because they were ones that looked cool.
Did you have the stoppy rubber bit at the front or back? Or both?
I had...
For extra weight.
I had stoppy rubber bit at the... I don't think I had stoppy rubber bits. Mine
and
were like
could,
sort of streety ones.
You could get jump bars. So... You could get a little bar.
Handlebars.
Get little handlebars for each
boot. Handlebars for your roller boots.
For each boot. So, yeah, it's like you're on a little mini quad. You've got to lift one leg up.
Oh, roller boots. Are you talking
boots.
Roller boots or roller blades?
Not blades, boots.
Oh, so I did roller blading.
Right, the two wheels at the front, two wheels at the back.
And you could get on the dancing.
And you could get the big socks that
did
went
you,
over them.
Could you do that dancing?
Yeah, we just.
You could
just
you
sort
do.
Of, yeah, you do like the right between the little cones.
Could you do that?
That, I think, is incredible to watch. Just because they're so small.
I bet
small.
You can do that.
I
do you know what? Because that's one
it.
Thing I should definitely set up, right? Is that you're one of those people who can do everything.
Yeah.
You're so annoying.
Like
you can, like, football, you're amazing. Bike riding, you're amazing. You're a good singer. You can dance. It's like, oh, you're so annoying. Thank God you're not 6 foot two.
I do have these conversations. I've got another friend, one of my best mates, who was my best man many years ago.
You got a friend?
Yeah, well, actually, cool. I've got a friend outside of biking, would you believe?
If you did,
yeah,
nice.
And we call it able-bodied, where you just get it. You're connected with your entire body. Like, spatial awareness.
Spatial awareness.
Like, instant. Like,
I thought you were talking to me as in, not like you, though, who's not able-bodied.
So, yeah, but I know, but that sounds real... Yeah, I didn't mean like that.
Sounds
but,
bad
like,
now.
It does sound bad.
That
and
sounds
I apologise
bad
if it came across that way. But, yeah, we call it able-bodied. So you pick something up, and it's just common sense. It's like, if I wanted to be a fireman tomorrow, I will. You know? Like, or if I wanted to fly a plane... I mean, that does require probably some sort of mathematical
physics. It's not like flying a plane, it's unbelievably easy.
If you can do it on the Xbox or whatever, you can get a rough idea on, you know, if you pull down, you go up. That's what you need to figure out.
I went and did flying lessons at Goodwood with Dougie Lampkin.
Flying lessons?
Flying lessons in a plane with a propeller. And on my first flight, Dougie Lampkin was sat in the back.
Right.
7 times world trials
a glider.
And I'm like, Dougie, you know I'm flying.
A genuine, like, did you take off as well?
Yeah, took off land. First flight I took off and landed. Well, the instructor was next to me. But,
so, like, that's quite a big plane if someone's next to you as well and you're flying
it's,
it.
It's, what are they called? A Cessna.
Oh, yeah.
Like an overwing Cessna. I can't remember the number of it. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. And then I flew around for 45 minutes, come in, landed, although the very last bit of landing, matey did. Because as you come in, you're going a lot faster than you thought. And then Dougie got in the front and he flew it. So
That's pretty nuts, actually.
It's cool.
Like, I love the idea of doing stuff. I don't want to be a pilot, but...
Scrub that.
If the opportunity came up, then I'd probably give it a go. And I'd probably be flying a 747 probably in a few weeks. No, I'm not that good at everything, Christ. No,
you
I
are,
think so.
You are one of those people who's like really, really. Yeah, that able body thing does something.
I think it stems from my mum, to be honest. Like, she's very competitive, and my dad's very. If you're going to build something, you've got to do it right. So having both of those together, so having that competitive edge and doing it right kind of works really well together. Mm. And, yeah, I think that's where it sort of came from. So going back to school, when I saw all these kids rocking up, there's one guy in particular, his name was Brent, he was a year older than me, and he turned up with a Cannondale Killer V, I think it was, and that back then was one heck of a bike for a kid to have at school. Mm. And we just treated him like, well, he obviously got treated really well from his parents, but we treated him like God, because all we wanted to do was just hang out with him. Because he had Z1 BAMs on his bike, all the latest products on there, and we were just, wow, this is amazing. So we went back home, went to the like the bureau cabinet, pulled out the Great Universal catalogue and tried to find a bike as close to that as possible for about 200 quid. So that was that was like the only thing that we could probably get our...
What was the first bike then?
It was a Leeway's Pulse.
I saw like a mountain bike.
It was a mountain bike, but it was about 200 quid and it had those suspension which looked like rigid forks with just some...
Like they put socks on it.
They put like little socks on it, and I think the suspension was probably sand. But that was like my pride and joy, and then, and I think you can only use the suspension once, and then that's it.
It doesn't go off.
Rusted, and then the seals pop out the top.
Yeah. Did they fix down or up?
They stayed down.
Oh, brilliant!
So it was more like a reverse mullet looking bike.
Yeah.
But it came with cow horns, you know, the old school chavvy bar ends that you have.
Yeah.
So it came with that. So I took them off.
I hate them.
And then, yeah, so we used to race to school, meet up with guys, because we used to live in a nice area. We used to live in this cul-de-sac with a big drive.
We used to meet up with guys.
We used to meet up with a lot of guys. Meet up with a lot of guys before school.
Yeah.
And when I say guys, it was all our friends from school. And we'd have this massive race to school. And I think that's just where it stemmed from. And then, we just...
I'm surprised you didn't start on a BMX, because you're so good on a BMX.
But this is why I think I managed to do all right on a mountain bike, was because back then it was... You hear a lot of stories from people my age who all have a BMX background. Oh, I used to race BMX, right, back in the 80s. And
Boring people.
Yeah. And my dad said, why don't you try a mountain bike? You know, my story's like, no, I just got a mountain bike out of the catalogue because some mate at school looked cool as hell on it.
Yeah.
So it's very like relatable in England anyway.
Yeah.
And because I was on a mountain bike, I wanted to have my own unique style anyway. So I was always trying out local jumps at, like near down the local car park with all my pals. And then, with a very BMX-influenced background, so... Every time I'd go down to Four Boys, One Stop, wherever, that sold a magazine, if there was a free DVD or a VHS tape, well, it would have been VHS tape, we'd buy it, because there could be one shot in there where someone's getting some air on a bike. And that's all I wanted to hunt down. And we just did that relentlessly for years.
Were you like really attracted to, like, because I guess you were like pretty much dirt jump man at the start there.
Yeah.
Were you like just desperate to get air? Was it like, was it all about getting air?
It was, so I'll tell a lie. I say it wasn't just school that got me into bikes. Me and my brother, we've always ridden bikes, and we've always had like, we used to live next to this car park and it was always empty, and there was, some people used it as a bit of a dumping ground for stuff. And there was this old, I think it was just an old like wardrobe door. We found some bricks, we propped that up. And I had this old, like a normal kid's bike that as you would, at like 8 years old or whatever, 10, I can't remember exactly. And there was me and my brother, we'd go over there with our camera and get some pictures, lie down on the floor and see how much air we'd get. And then we'd wait for mum to print them off, like, I don't know, probably 6 months later.
Yeah.
And then we'd compare who got the highest air. And then I was like, Jesus.
It's like protracted competition.
Yeah, it was. But and then I'd look at Ollie's height and I'd be like, Ollie's my brother. And I'd be like, Ollie, I'm going a little higher than you. And I was like, yes.
He's older, right?
Yeah, he's older by a couple of years. About 18 months exactly, actually. And I was going higher and I was like, how can that happen? I'm smaller.
Mm.
And then, that was where the whole going high and doing loads of jumps sort of spurred yeah. really.
That's actually quite similar. My brother's like that, actually.
And it was very competitive. And I think that's the one thing that I always had over my brother. My brother was nuts on a bike, yeah. like further on, later into his career. But during that time, it was, I think having a brother and...
Famously the first person to throw a bar spin, wasn't he?
Yeah, my brother was the first person to do a bar spinning competition. That was at NASS, like, 2000 and...
We should say on a mountain bike.
Yeah, on a mountain bike, yeah.
They were buzzing them things around on BMX for quite a few years.
Yeah, he was. I mean, and then, there is no... It's not legit enough to say that he did, because about 6 months or maybe 9 months later, we saw a new world disorder.
That
it was only one guy. John Cowan done it. So we were like, we don't know the actual who done it first sort of job, but because it's my brother, obviously it's my brother.
We'll say your brother, but we're pretty sure it's John Cowan.
No. Let's go with my brother. But it could have been John Cowan, yeah.
It could have been.
But yeah, so
I was going to ask you in a bit who your favourite rider was, but John Cowan's got to be up there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he definitely is.
You had
is.
Mad love for him back in the day.
I did, until he was my teammate. Yeah,
I should tell listeners that I've known you a long time, so I've been through your fanboy stage of.
Yeah, yeah.
I was talking to John the other day, and you couldn't help but drop his name.
Yeah,
you loved it.
Yeah, so that's going back to our animal bike tour days. They were good fun.
Yeah. We shouldn't jump ahead though, because I really want to get how you got into the sport, because I'm thinking, like, when I first saw you as a mountain bike rider, it would have been when I was doing shows of Animal, and we were at like a Halfords gig or something, and you came along and you were the first guy doing backflips.
That was when I first jumped on board this, like, there was an MBUK road tour.
It was like no one went to it. We were literally in shows in front of zero people.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that clearly. But the very first time I saw the Animal Bike Tour I was thinking about this on the way up.
Mm.
And it was Plymouth, dirty weekend, where there was a free cross event. I was riding for 24/7. Clive Gosling was the compere.
Who now runs Cannondale?
Who now
in
runs
the UK.
Cannondale? In
oh, no,
UK.
GT. He's GT now, isn't he?
CST. And yeah, that was the very first time I ever witnessed the bike tour. And then I remember Animal approaching me, I think it was that day after I won the dirt jump contest, saying, we're looking for a jump rider. And then that was probably my...
Oh, and then you kind of got asked to come
that was
along
probably my
like...
induction to, whatever you call it, audition.
Audition,
there we go,
maybe,
word,
yeah.
For being a part of the bike tour. And then after that, it was like a full-time gig, wasn't it?
So, thousand backflips a day.
We'll get onto that probably.
That's a long way down the line, because I want to think about how you got to that point.
So
that's sort of like a much more
sort
normal story.
It's
a much more normal story for everyone, is because there's a point where I think there's a point where every kid built jumps and jumped with their bigger brothers, and you know, there's like that common story. Like what you were saying, that sounded exactly like my childhood, and probably loads of people listening built some, you know, got a door, put some bricks up, did a jump. We all do that.
Yeah.
It's like, where does it change that you're like, you could have done all sorts of things, but at some point you're like,
can I honestly say that the going back to getting those free VHS videos, that's what gripped me. I was like, wow, I really like this scene. I didn't realise there was something as big as it was.
Mm.
You know, there's like RAV4 series and all that, like the whole UK dirt jump videos being chucked out on magazines and things. I was like, wow, this is really cool.
Mm.
But no one's really doing what I'm doing. So then I started searching or trying. Like, the only thing close to what I was doing back then was an advert of someone getting air, and you'd hear of like Simon Tabron having a go at mountain biking, and then you'd see, like back in the day, Bike 99 and stuff like that, where you'd see like the MBUK boys, like, what was it, Alex Park, Jamie Tompkins, all them guys just sending it, Luke Smith obviously back then, and then you've got Paul Roberts trying the gnarliest gaps, breaking, smashing himself up.
Do you remember that jump, that gap he tried to do that time, and it was like no way was it on, and he tried to jump it, and I just remember him going as he realised he was halfway across and he wasn't going to make it, and he just went,
full commitment.
Yeah, screamed into the ground.
That was doing it for the crowd.
Yeah.
I'm going to ride this one out.
That guy was nuts on a bike.
You didn't. It was, but that was what was like, this is incredible. And if, like, if any of you listeners ever went to Bike 99 and didn't have a tyre around your chest, then you're not into it.
Free tyres.
But that's what it was like back then. And
signed by people.
Going back to the VHS thing, I ended up just building up this huge collection until Chainspotting came along, where you...
That stopped you.
And then that was when I decided, right, is this really what I want to pursue? Yeah. No, it clearly was. And Will Longdon... done it for me, actually. He said there was one quote in there which
World Masters downhill champion.
No, it wasn't him riding at all. Yeah. It's just what he said, and he's like, he hates football because it's a team sport. Like,
I remember this. Yeah.
And that one, I can't remember it word for word, but he did say, like, you know, I don't want to be a part of a team, I want to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
And that then was like, that's all I needed to hear.
No way.
And every time I've seen him, I've forgotten to say it, because, like,
you should tell him, he would love that.
Yeah, so
that,
Will Longdon's quote, like, literally did spur me on to
go the next level. He's an amazing guy. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah, well, I bumped into him at Bike Park Wales, but it was just by that new Vanta line at Bike Park Wales. Anyway, it was pretty bad weather day, so we just rode A4 semi.
He's an amazing guy. Now the manager of Saracen.
That's right, yeah.
So team, yeah. Racing team now, of course.
So yeah, that one quote done it for me, and... Mm. So,
that's incredible. Actually.
Yeah, it was, and I can't remember. Crikey, we're talking decades ago.
So the trials on Chainspotting didn't grab you.
Well, obviously you Warner, Petey, all them lot. Yeah, of course you did. But it was just that one quote. I mean, you've probably said loads of things, and I'm like, yeah, that's amazing. But I can't remember.
I can't remember any of them. For anyone listening who's not in the UK, Chainspotting is a video that. Is very UK scene.
Yeah.
It's featuring Rob Warner and Steve Peat are like the main protagonists in it, and they were really living the life of the pro downhillers at the time.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of hangers on, me included.
Yeah.
And we bounced around some places, went to LA and just had an amazing time. But this video came out and it really sort of caught the imagination of a lot of people.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because I think on there, like, Petey just looked like a god on that video.
Yeah.
He's like a god. And I remember hanging out with him when they were filming the video, thinking, man, this guy is living the life.
That's what
and
I loved
about
it.
He's still doing it.
And I loved how individual everyone was as well.
Yeah, everyone's very different.
And that's what I liked about it. Like, and then, you know, going back to Will's quote, it just sort of, that was the final nail. It was like, that's all I need to hear. And that spurred me on to just start pursuing, like, well, more dirt jumping and things. But the only way that we could go out to these events was just waiting for magazines and things like that to say, right, in 2 months' time, there is a dirt jump event in a shed somewhere or whatever. And it was just things, it was very low-key, but very exclusive.
How long from when you sort of felt like that to when you were, like, a pro rider, what's the timeline?
The timeline, I reckon it took... So when they say, how long have you been riding for? I could say, oh, I could ride a bike before I could walk. But when my mum said that I rode a bike before I could walk. But that's nonsense, really.
Yeah, still not that good at walking.
I keep walking sideways. Crab boy.
Yeah, it's because of the boots.
Yeah,
it's because of the roller boots.
It's the roller boots. But, I was properly into it when I was about 14.
Yeah.
So I used to get told off at school, Grant, put the magazine away, you're supposed to be learning about religious education.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was at the time.
What school did you go to?
RE. Was it a school?
Yeah,
no, I didn't. Yeah. So anyway, or geography, wherever it was.
Yeah.
But I was always in trouble for reading magazines. And my teacher actually said to me, like, put that away, you're never going to do that. Like, proper, like, and I was like, how dare you sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I just started reading more. Anyway, I wasn't a rebel at school, but I didn't like people telling me what to do. So anyway, I was 14 when I was properly into it and really studying all the riders, like studying like a route I could focus on. And that was jumping. Thankfully, about 2 years of being into bikes, a skate park was made like within... a good mile,
yeah,
as the crow flies. See, And that changed everything. My parents split up, which was sad, but we moved closer to the skate park.
Which
was incredible.
Yeah.
So, although that was a heartbreaking moment, it wasn't. It was incredible because it was right there. And then we rode there every single day, every day. So that it was very... We live in Southampton.
That makes so much sense because your park skills are off the charts.
Yeah, so it's very back wheel BMX, that sort of era style, where it's very like foo-foo-noo sort of fakey sort of stuff. And that's kind of where it stems from. And I've learned so much bike handling skills just riding skate park.
Yeah. Can we just quickly talk about the art of a foo-foo-noo just for a moment?
Oh, it's just that.
Because like the nuance of it, right? Because someone will say to me as a trials rider, well, you can hop on your back wheel all day. You must be able to do a foo-foo-noo. Like, no.
No.
You can't. That isn't what it... Oh, it's took me so long.
It's just that feeling of going, like, the first time you're learning it, it's the scariest thing to do in the world.
Terrifying. But and it starts at the bottom.
And it starts at the bottom. It's just, it's all about getting the right speed. You've got to go slower than you think. And it's the lean back in.
It's terrifying.
And it's the connection. It's like Avatar, you know, when they connect your hair to the, like, to the horse. But that's like with your bike, you're like, work with me. And you rely on your brake.
Yeah.
And then you just feel your back wheel just go, and you might hear your rim go, and then that little pop back from the air, you're like...
The moment you do one, it's a good like feeling. The best. I'm nearly well
Very
up,
similar
though.
To trials, I'd say, in a way, when you get that little sweet spot. And
well, I mean, that's the thing that I found so hard about it, is that, like, hopping on the back wheel, obviously, is just a trial staple. And you would swear blind, and you'll see trials riders going to skate parks, and they'll do a tyre tap, and you're like, that is not a tyre tap, dude. Yeah, that's a back hop. A tyre tap's
and then back in.
A more fluid movement. But the foo-foo-noo is like, it looks to the outsider who doesn't know the sport that much, like they just did a back hoppy thing.
Yeah.
It's like, but when you see someone do a foo-foo-noo, like they are super confident with it, especially if they just do it on a ramp they've never ridden before. Yeah. You're like, oh... That was beautiful.
It is nice, isn't it? I've just recently posted up a video on my Instagram where I won quite a bit of cash for doing this big foo-foo-noo on this back rail.
Oh, man.
Edge of the Throne, I'll show you later.
I think a foo-foo-noo on a rail is easier because that is like hopping on the back wheel. Because that is like,
but
on the coping, on the ramp you're on, that's where I think it becomes difficult. Because it's that little pop of like...
I know what you mean.
You just got to turn it a bit.
And you have to go up sort of straight with a slight turn to start the rotation and then pop and then... that is good.
Thank you for indulging me there.
But no, that. I agree. It is a good feeling.
And love a feeling.
So yeah, like BMX was a massive influence. All my friends rode BMX. There were a few mountain bike friends, but they were sort of in and out of it, and they didn't. And I kind of didn't really hang around with them so much because they weren't into bikes as much as me. I was obsessed with it. And we created this little crew, and we just rode that every single day until, like I said, an event popped up. We would train on these at the skate park, learning all our tricks, and then we'd attempt to make some jumps in the forest. Well, I'd say. In the forest, it was more like in the middle of a green lane sort of thing. And we'd be like, oh, why is that broken? Why has someone smashed it down? Oh, it's because people drive down there or something, you know? It was like really badly built. But it was just definitely the best times. But going back to what you originally said, like how long did it take? So when I was 14, when I was really into it, riding skate parks and just out the front messing around, until I was until I was about 17.
Yeah.
I started thinking, this could actually, like...
This could kick off.
This could kick off. And it wasn't until I was 21, which is quite late, like, in today, to be a pro rider, a pro rider at 14. That was when it all sort of started to happen. And I was an apprentice electrician at the time. And I got a call from Ross Tricker after I won all these events that I used to go to.
Yeah.
And I did win everything. And Ross Tricker said, come out to America. And this was the biggest moment of my life.
Yeah.
I thought, right, I've got one chance here. Mm. I hate my job. And I'm going to go for it. So I saved up, I think it was £1,200 at the time.
Mm. And that's a lot of money.
For someone who was on £100 a week, working 40 hours.
What was your job?
I was an apprentice electrician.
Oh,
but it was more, and you know, it was
Like a self-employed electrician, and you were like his lackey.
No, it wasn't. It was for this. It was for a company called Malco at the time, where they made those, you know, those boxes you see at the end of the road.
Yeah.
Like those, all those massive shelter, like those big boxes you see out in the
like
woods.
Like data installation.
Kind of, yeah. It was all, like we used to, but it was a production line, and and I was supposed to be an electrician, like wiring up ring mains, like domestic stuff.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, and I found myself changing light bulbs and fixing chairs. Mm. And I was like, I mean, I don't mind this because I've got the keys to the roof, and when the sun's out, I'm going up there and reading the map. That was the only time I enjoyed it. But yeah, that was, I had that opportunity, and it was £1,200. I managed to save it, and I went out there, and yeah, sponsors flooded in after.
So what was it you were going to? What?
So that was Cowan's.
John Cowan.
Yeah, it was John Cowan, because back then it was the... And I keep talking,
that was his
I
jam,
keep talking about this, blimey, it's such a... But it was such a pivotal moment in my career and for the UK to be recognised. Mm. And, went over there, won that, and then, the rest is history. I just got all these...
So that would you would have got Kona from that?
So Kona were instantly on me, boom.
And they, at the time, they were the... They were the free ride, the dirt jump brand.
Like, they really were. They were such a cool... It was such a cool brand, and I remember...
I don't think they have that now as much.
No, I don't know what's happened.
They were edgy.
I honestly don't know what really happened, but they're still a cool brand, but I don't know what happened to that.
Good bites, yeah, but...
At the time, it was the Clump team, and everyone wanted to be a part of it, and the guys at top, so Dan and Jake, the owners... They just referred to us as cartoon characters that we were like, you know, and that was just how it was. Everyone was cool, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And to be a part of that was the best feeling ever. Yeah. And then it just...
Well, that's kind of like that's that moment that, like, I guess as the person it's happening to, it's hard to notice it, but it's that moment where you become one of those guys that everyone else looks at and goes... Yeah. Oh my God. But you don't really know it. You don't know it at the time.
But everyone who's in the Clump team is the same.
Yeah.
They have the same feeling. So once you're in that position, like, it's weird. It's not, I'm not being big headed, but like, who do you look up to then? Do you know what I mean? Because you've made it.
Yeah.
Like, you've achieved everything you want.
The hard bit is then you've got to stay there. That's the hard bit.
and that's when it all goes wrong.
Yeah,
and that's when it can hit you hard.
Yeah.
And to maintain that, like, competitive, like, sort of attitude is difficult. And if you have injuries, it can set you back. And obviously, the older you get, you've got commitments and things like that. But I think that's when I started just being a little bit more open with things and starting to listen more to people and understand what keeps them ticking. Like, what are you into? And some people would be like, oh, I love watching basketball. It's incredible. I love the energy. And I'm like... Why can't I do that? I'm a biker. Like, I'm kind of at a point now where I'm like, oh, I've done it now. Like, what do I do now?
Do you feel like you had a moment where you burnt out a bit?
Yeah, 100%. Mm. Yeah, and I think, I think the moment I stopped winning events, that hurt. Like,
that's hard.
It is hard. It, like, as a very competitive person, and I'll openly admit it. Like, if I'm going to enter a contest, there's only one spot, and that's win.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's pointless. That's my attitude. And when that didn't happen anymore, I started. Here's a quote from you, actually. Moving on to you. So, talking about Will Longdon.
This will be useless.
Talking about Will Longdon and his quote saying that he doesn't like being a part. He doesn't like football. Don't want to be a part of a team. Wants to be himself, sort of thing. I remember when we were on the Animal Bike Tour, because the whole transition of me not riding professionally to then riding for Kona and then. The Animal Bike Tour with you, I always remember you said that personality is so important. Personality pays, were your exact words. Mm. And that stuck with me as well. So
it's weird because I haven't got one.
Yeah, I know.
I saw someone else with one and I thought that would be a good idea.
And that was what, genuinely.
I don't know why I said that.
But it's true, isn't it? Like, you see a lot of riders sort of transition from riding at a high level to now doing things like YouTube. Like, look at Matt Jones, for example. Like, he had enough of...
And he's got an amazing picture.
And his personality is incredible.
I think what I used to think about back then and what I realised when I started doing shows as opposed to trying to be like a comp rider or whatever is that I started off doing demos.
Yeah.
And that's like sort of like you trying to show how good you are to a crowd.
Yeah.
And then eventually what I realised was I'm doing like a little performance.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a little bit of a lie because I'm going to start not with what I can do.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get better through the show. And then at the end, there's some kind of finale.
Yeah.
And it's like a little bit of theatre. And I started to just accept that. Mm. Like, actually, I'm really lucky to do that. So just try and be that. And that's when I used to think, let everyone see who you are.
Yeah.
Like, and what you're like. Like, really be yourself, and but make sure that's, like, you know, the sort of genuine version of you. Because they, if you're smiling and have a nice time, they will do the same.
Exactly.
That was it. Because yeah. I don't know how many shows we must have done. We're like, right, everyone, put your smiles. Like, it's pouring with rain.
Yeah,
and you're like,
but this is
start enjoying.
This yourself, is exactly what I was going
to. That's what they've come to see.
It's true. Like that's what I was about to say. Like the only thing that carried me through those events. I mean, the first couple of years was like, woohoo, yeah, I'm stoked. I'm riding. Yeah. I'm getting paid for it.
Yeah.
But and then it sort of gets the best of you. And the only way that you, I mean, luckily we knew how to sort of spur each other on.
Yeah.
And we do feed off because we are showmen. And we can always remember, and we can always remember the guys in the crowd after a show saying,
"Ah,
show off." Yeah. Hang on a minute. Well, I mean.
Of course,
of course.
But I used to like spotting the naysayers before you start.
Yeah,
I used to like picking them out and be like, "I am going to show you."
Yeah,
like because I know what I'm going to do. And you think
you don't.
You've just seen what I can do when I'm warming up, and you don't know, but it's a trick. I'm going to do an illusion on you, and you don't know I'm going to trick you. I used to love it. Because at the end of it, they'd be like, that was amazing. And I was like, yeah, I know, but I could have done that at the start.
Yeah.
Took you there.
You're still in. And you fell for it, mate.
Yeah, it's like,
but yeah,
it's a great trick.
And
I love it.
And that's what I thank you for as well, is like I learned a lot from that. Like, to be fair, A lot of the times when we were on tour and it was chucking it down and windy.
Oh, it sucks sometimes.
The first thing I said to Robin, who was our manager at the time, was like, Rob, I ain't riding.
Like, send mine out.
Before it's even like rained, I was like, well, it's coming. Not up for it, mate.
Yeah.
And like my energy sort of dropped. But you would be like, come on, let's go! And well, I'd be like, where do you get this energy from?
I've always had a thing that if the weather's bad, like the worse the weather is, the more you give it.
Yeah.
Because you almost get into a situation where you can't lose.
Yeah.
Because people just, in the end, go, Annie did it in that weather.
Yeah,
so you get an extra bonus point.
And they're watching you from underneath the ice cream.
Yeah. Like, well, we always had the rule on the bike tour is if there's someone watching you riding, because if they can stand in it, you can ride in it. Yeah. So I would...
That's when I'd try and get the blow dart out on them. Right.
Put them out.
Robin, they're not here anymore, mate.
He's fallen over.
He's asleep.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably people listening will be wondering what the bike tour is, but basically we were like a stunt show that would travel around the UK.
I personally think it was the best bike tour globally.
I tell you what, it went to Singapore. We took it to Singapore, do you remember? We went to Singapore and Kuala Lumpur.
Oh, God.
And do you remember when we arrived? So me and Chop, we were asked to go out and do this tour in Asia, and we were like, the bike tours hit the bike big time. We're doing a world tour. And we went there, and when we arrived, they had a press conference table with our little names in front of us. And we sat down, and we looked at each other like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And the people who were organising it were looking at us, and we were looking at them, and there was no press at all. And a person to interview us, and they just asked us some questions, and we were like, what the hell is going on? Because I think the guy organised it thought everyone... I think they thought we were megastars or something.
Yeah.
And they brought us over and they thought like people were going to turn up. And no one did.
Yeah, like it was unbelievable. And the funniest thing was we thought we were going to turn up and ride what we ride.
Yeah.
So Martin, you like trials riders, you'd normally have those big, what are they called?
Cotton reels.
Giant cotton reels and trials. Yeah. It's a real iconic.
Like cable spools.
Yeah, cable spools. A real iconic part of a trials course, isn't it?
Yeah, junk material, perfect.
They didn't go and just buy one from an electrical wholesaler. No. They made one.
Out of the lightest wood. They could have used it as like a fine dining table.
And they made that, and then my ramp Can you remember?
It had a curve
it was,
in it.
It was like a jersey barrier on it. It was, right, can you do all your tricks on that? And I managed to tail whip it, and that was probably about it, because I don't know how, but...
No, but you remember, when they first made it, it had like a hump in it.
It had a hump, but it went like that. That was the ramp, wasn't it? And I remember it so... But and then I said, like, can you make something more like a nice gradual lip? And they did. And they went out overnight.
Yeah, but your drawing on the fax paper that you sent us, that had a little bump in it. And I was like, that's because I did it with a pencil.
I think they literally did
literally
hold it out like that.
It by line.
Lasered it.
Well, I drew cotton reels for them. I drew
and
cotton reels. And they made them...
Unbelievable.
Like, with a framework inside it. Like... And what was crazy is the factory they made it in. Do you remember outside in the car park?
Look, there, was
there were metal cotton reels.
Like that's I know, but that's how nice they thought it had to be made, so they did it. So
they
that
must
was
have spent.
But mate,
well,
that
do you remember
was good.
That massive framework they built for you as a roll in? Do you remember we yeah. went? We turned up and yeah. they were still building it, and you went up and stood in it. I've got photos of you stood on it, just like. This is better than the thing we've got at home.
Yeah, that was actually pretty good. But I've recently moved house and I went through all these photos and I saw some pictures from Singapore and yeah. the only pictures I've got is you and me sweating buckets. That's, or drinking Red Robins.
Yeah, dying in the heat. Oh, Red Robins. You know what? I haven't found it. That was a cocktail that we had in a bar in the hotel we were staying in, which was a ludicrous hotel. It was incredible.
Yeah, we were treated the
whole,
like
the
stars.
The whole trip. But we really weren't stars.
And we faked it pretty much, didn't we?
It was like amazing.
We turned up, like the guy that owned Animal out in Singapore was like, he had a lot of money, didn't he? And like we went to his house and he lived on what looked like Mayfair.
It was incredible. And his wife was super hot.
And she was
very touchy,
very, very welcoming woman.
Wasn't she?
And they,
she
and
was
he had
amazing.
His, he had his music room, and then he had next to his dining table, he had that length swimming pool.
Yeah.
You know, it was about 2 metre wide, wasn't it? Where he could do like.
I remember you and you, because he had a drum set and that, and you guys were all doing.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
we were like proper rocking. That's when I realised, like, God, Chopper can really sing.
Yeah, that was a bit drunk, sort of metal. Vibe that
Why
one,
didn't you
it?
Do more with your singing?
I couldn't, I'll save it for the shower or the car, to be honest.
But you are a good singer. You are a good singer.
I would like to pursue that at one point, but. Nah.
Didn't you try and do The Voice?
Oh, yeah, I've done that.
What
yeah.
happened with Tried. Doing The Voice?
Entered.
Who did you enter yourself? Like,
yeah, I entered myself.
Voice.
Yeah, I entered myself. I was like, I'll go on then. And then
it's like your ego talking to yourself.
Like, yeah, you do it. You're good. I'll be like, oh, don't worry, do it. So I ended up doing it, and I got to the final stage before live shows, and I did mess up.
Ah, I did mess get the better
up.
Of you.
Yeah, I didn't say it at the time. I said, I didn't want to do it. But
yeah.
I did mess up. I choked.
What was your song?
Oh yeah, the Eagles.
Oh, really? Oh,
was
nice.
It Hotel California? Because they wanted more of a rock and roll sort of style.
Yeah,
they didn't
yeah.
normally have that. You have all the usual.
I mean, to be honest, your story was made for that show.
Yeah, that's probably what won them over, to be honest. A bit of a stunt, to be honest. But they did. I'd like to say.
Dirt Jumper Gone Rock Singer. It was gold,
yeah,
man.
There's
it's
quite
gold.
A few puns in there. I can't think of any right now. But
it would have been amazing if you'd done it.
It would have been
still
pretty
time,
funny.
Still time.
Yeah, there is still time, but no, I'm all right, thanks. I think my eldest is 9 now, and she probably
one of your,
she
probably, one of
she I mean, wouldn't have any friends at school if she
dad happened. Dad's on The Voice.
Yeah, with his hat back to front.
Oh my
Dad,
God!
Please stop it.
I wish you'd got through. I wish you'd done it. I'd have been your biggest. Honestly, I'd have been
like,
your biggest fanboy.
I would
ever.
I would have really imagine that though. Like, imagine if I actually did. So I did a podcast with some other guys and I
I'm not your first podcast.
And I did mention it, but I didn't say like really how I felt, and I was but I genuinely did want to do well.
Yeah.
But I did choke. It was gnarly experience.
I bet it's scary.
Really scary.
I tell you what, I've got a similar thing with Animal once. I went to Animal and I said, you know what? Animal was a UK brand. I say was, they still exist, but it's a shell of the thing it was.
Yeah.
And they sponsored all sorts of, they sponsored surfers, windsurfers, mountain bikers like me and Chop, and snowboarders, It's a great team. At one point, the team of people, athletes, was incredible. It was a lovely thing to be part of. And I went to the marketing team and said, what people would really enjoy is seeing people who are good at their thing, like the snowboarder or the Alan Stokes, the beautiful surfer.
Like Ken, wasn't he?
Oh, he just looked incredible. What people would like, see them out of their comfort zone?
Yeah.
That would be a brilliant marketing campaign.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, that is such a good idea, Martin. Let's do it, right? And then it backfired on me because they found something they knew I would be really uncomfortable doing.
Yeah.
And I had to do it.
Right. What was that?
I had to go and do a thing where I auditioned to be a cover model for Men's Health.
What, and you would have hated that?
You would have thought that. Are you kidding? Yes.
You would have loved it.
No way. I was absolutely terrified. Oh, my God.
You could have just sort of, what, just your forearms? Just like that on the screen.
Oh my God, it was so terrifying. But that was like when it sings, you walk in a room and everyone's there like, and I'm like, massive. What am I doing in here?
And they're properly into like nutrition and
Mr. Universe was there and he had his giant sword trophy that he'd won at Mr. Universe with him. It was like this big. And I was like, I'm in the wrong room.
Yeah, you feel a bit...
Got down to the last six.
Feel a bit bad.
You know?
But yeah, that's...
But I had to go in front of a group of people. One of them was that swimmer, like judges, and I had to take my top off. And I was like, they were like, right.
Did you actually do this?
I had to actually do it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought you didn't. I thought you didn't want to do it, but you actually did.
No, I'd said, I filmed it and everything. Oh, it was a nightmare. Oh, I hated it. Absolutely, backfired so big. Anyway, let's talk about your X Factor.
Whatever it was.
Tell me about that. So did you have to go in front of judges to do that?
Yeah. Oh. So the first one was. It was right next to Wembley Stadium in the Hilton Hotel, and.
Oh my God! I'd be so nervous.
And there was thousands of people there.
Yeah.
Like loads. I turned up with my hat back to front, flip flops, vest. Genuinely, honestly, it was boiling. Like, I didn't care. Everyone else was like...
You'd have gone like that if it was cold.
Yeah.
Run it. That's going to be fine.
Thankfully, there wasn't, like, a stage for me where I had to sing in front of people. I think they just wanted to filter out loads before we went up. So, anyway, I had this... there was two people. It was one of the producers and this other woman. Mm. And they looked really, like, important. Mm. And they spoke, like... Hello, Grant. And I'm like, oh no, why can you be like, yeah, mate? Like, and then you'd be way more loose, but they're like, hello, Grant, what do you do? And then I warmed to them. I was like, right, okay, I'm going to drop in. I've got a kid.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, what's her name? And then I said, oh my God. So I was like, yes, that 1 hour over.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to the guy. And the guy was saying something. I was like, oh, look, yeah, your hair looks sick. And he's like, thanks, man. So I was like, right, that's me making myself feel like I'm in.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just started, I sang a couple of songs and they were like, that was amazing. That was really good. Yeah. And I was like, wow, that was
really
good.
Oh my God,
so I was really stoked with that. Anyway, I moved on to the next stage, which was just some interviews, a little bit more background info on me. And they were like, oh, this is really cool. Thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. And then that was it. And then on the way back down, the guy who was in that hotel room, who was one of the main like producers of the show, he came up to me. He's like, "That was an incredible audition, dude." And I was like,
"Oh man!"
Wow. I was like, "Mate, I'm in."
Oh my God!
So that's why I probably choked because I had all that like going into the next bit, which was a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made me sort of brick it because I thought I'm so close. I could do this if I get this right. And then
you so could do it. I know
it was.
When you told me about it, because your girlfriend at the time was like a Charlotte.
No, it was my ex's sister.
Right.
She's in.
You had a girlfriend called Charlotte, right?
No, I did have a girlfriend.
Yeah, like when you were like way
young. Yeah. And but yeah, we don't talk about that sort of stuff anymore. But. anyway,
we did cut that bit out.
Yeah, cut that out.
Cut that out.
But yeah, so my ex's sister was in. I was going to say Fleetwood Mac then, not Fleetwood Mac.
That had been good.
In
because they were all.
Oh,
right.
What's that one? What's that woman with long ginger hair like?
T'Pau.
No. Oh,
don't push too far. She's
a backing. Yeah, she's a backing singer for what's it? It's a real famous band. Massive, like
T'Pau.
She's
massive.
Got. T'Pau. That'll do.
Not T'Pau. No, we've got to get to the right band. I've got to know.
She's got long ginger hair, and She's singing...
Tori Amos.
No, it's not. It's... Let me find it quick. You can cut all this out. I've got to find it.
No, we're not cutting this out. I want to know. Come on.
All right, what's
the name? We've got to find it. Name one of their songs.
I can't. I can't remember it. They're massive right now.
Oh, now?
Yeah, now. Begins with maybe F.
Oh, is it the people who got the song in the Twilight films?
I don't know, maybe.
Panama. No. I can't think of it.
Oh, what's it called? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man.
I can't remember it. But anyway, she was like a scout for The Voice. And I ended up sort of missing a few stages, say. So I kind of threw it away when I got to the final bit. But that would have been really interesting. But yeah, that's kind of... I wouldn't say that's competitive. That's probably more ballsy.
That was ballsy.
Because that was definitely like something that can really scare you. Like that was me. It was being out of my comfort zone for sure. Mm. And I think that's probably what did get the best of me. And I learned from that, and I was like, right, okay, I won't do that again. But I might make. Yeah, man, but I would
push yourself.
You know, part of my bucket list it would be to like make a song or something, you know.
Well, I guess these days you could do it a lot. Well, you're a TikTok star now.
Yes, mate. Yeah.
Start busting it out on TikTok.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting.
That's the way to do it. I think your greatest comedy character, because what we're probably not getting to in this, is you are quite a funny chap.
Yeah, thanks.
We're not getting to the comedy, but one of your greatest characters is Ronan Blunt.
Yeah, Ronan Blunt, yes. Yeah,
so which I think he could have his own career.
So it's a mixture of Ronan Keaton's voice and James Blunt, isn't it? So we come up with Ronan Blunt. So
I would love you to meet James Blunt, right? Because have you ever looked at his Twitter? He is the funniest fucker
in the world. He's a pretty gnarly guy,
he's
isn't he?
He's so funny. He has like people diss him.
Yeah.
Like, you sing like a girl.
Yeah.
You've got no talent. And then he'll text back like, yeah, and no mortgage.
Yeah. Yeah, but and it's just like,
so
what do you
good.
Say to that? Yeah, he's all over TikTok as well. And
things like, and your wife loves me.
Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? Like, he's just...
So funny.
He's like, I don't know if he's a hero for most blokes or not, but
he's a gnarly dude.
He's a pretty crazy chap.
He's like the most well-spoken military SAS singer star.
Yeah, he is.
That's great.
But I think he just plays on it.
Can we have a little bit of Ronan Blunt? Just a bit of a hint of it.
I can't even remember. How does it go? it's almost yodel, isn't it?
You're beautiful.
It's like a mixture. Right, that's enough.
I won't drag into Ronan Blunt. It's too funny.
So yeah, singing, sort of, I'd say I've been there, done that, but I haven't. I'd like to revisit it at some point, but maybe not.
Where do you think you were in the riding? Because you touched on people come along and start beating you.
So back to the whole...
You were smashing it for... probably 3 or 4 years.
A good five and a half.
Yeah, yes. I mean, you had a window where you were...
I won everything.
Yeah, you were untouchable.
And I enjoy talking about that time, to be honest, because...
Good fun, isn't it?
It was, because, like, from 99 to 2000, and middle of 2005, I won everything. I came second in one...
Mm. But what I find in podcasts is it's better to talk about where we started losing. So moving on to that,
moving on to the losing bit. So yeah, after
Who was it? Was it Pilgrim? And you thought
it was actually
shit.
Mike Smith?
Really?
Yeah, it was Mike Smith. So Mike Smith's got his own bike shop, MB Cyclery, down in sort of Surrey way.
Mike Smith wasn't a better rider than you,
but he sent it that day, and I crashed a lot. I think.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. You know, not sort of making. Mm. That
no, but who was it? Who was it who generally sort of made you think? Not like just the individual moment,
but who did it?
Who was the next wave where you thought, "Wow, there"? Because Pilgrim, obviously Sam Pilgrim.
I think Pilgrim has done it with textbook style. Yeah. You know, he's just been there from a very young age. Like I remember when I was winning these events, and Pilgrim was always floating around in the background. He was the one who was committed to riding. I'd turn up to an event sometimes. I'd be like, oh, I can't bother to ride, and then I'd see a guy with a leopard helmet on, sending it.
He looked ridiculous.
I was like, this guy's pretty good. He's like the new era. Mm. And then he...
But he couldn't have looked less cool.
He didn't look that cool at all, did he?
No, like, but he could just ride.
It's like
so
he went
good.
In to TK Maxx.
Yeah, he literally...
And someone was like, right, pick whatever you want. You've got 5 seconds. And that was his outfit every time he rode. Even his bike. So, sorry, Sam, but like, he... he's like, from the very start, he's just slowly progressed into this, well, effectively, YouTube sensation, hasn't he? He's like, but he's done it all.
What a kid.
He's done everything. So like, I wasn't really worried about Sam was because he's such a likeable guy.
Oh, yeah.
It was the people that turned up with that, I'm going to beat you, Phil. Yeah. And, like, and then it became the Karate Kid sort of thing. Yeah, like, they're Cobra Kai and I'm Daniel. And I was like, oh, what?
Oh, wait, look at it.
Yeah. So,
that's
like,
funny.
And that's kind of how I saw it. And who could I sort of... I think it was after I crashed in 2005, which was really rubbish, when I came back, everyone was all of a sudden just good.
Yeah.
Or I didn't realise everything around me was just... Yeah, the
everything
level
was accelerating. Oof. And I think at that point... Like, let's talk about that crash for a minute, because it was gnarly. Like, that crash, you can describe it in a mo, but to frame it, that crash happened at a point where... Well, literally, like, it put the brakes on your riding development in a moment where the learning curve was steep.
Yeah, it was.
Like, everyone was starting to go, like, whatever you can do on a BMX,
so whether it was it was a blessing in disguise, I don't know, but it came at a time where I was on fire and then instantly put out.
But basically, tell me about the crash.
So I was in Portugal with Lance McDermott, who is my teammate at the time, with 24/7. Timo Pritzel, German megastar. Mm. And we were riding this, it was like a demo, and Robin was there, who was our tour manager at the time, taking photos. And I did this huge 360, over-rotated, landed on my handlebars and compressed and split my pancreas. Not there and then, I realised that a day after when I returned home on the flight. And then I was on an intensive care for like 7 days, like, Jeez. Which was, it was gnarly. So, and that ruined everything, really. Yeah. And I could never really sort of come back from that. And then watching everyone around me just improve rapidly.
Mm.
Because back then, skate parks were being built. And like for me, skate parks is where you'd go because the weather's always the same in the skate park, indoor skate park.
Yeah.
So those were my training facilities. And I'd see all these guys popping up.
And like, it was the era of the foam pit as well.
Yeah, it was.
Suddenly everyone was learning
and
safety.
And then everyone was like just sending fronties. And I'm like... guys, like, wait for me. And then it got to a point where I was
Former
like,
friends.
I can't catch up with these guys like right now. My confidence is not. I think if my confidence was there, for sure.
Yeah.
But because it wasn't, because that hurt so much, I didn't realise it at the time. But looking back now, that is...
It messes with your head. Sometimes a crash messes with your head.
It does. Like, you know, you can learn how to crash, but sometimes one will get you.
Mm.
And that one got me and sort of, you know, and then going back to your quote again, your personality pays. So I played on that. So I was like, right, if I'm going to stay in this industry, which is effectively the only thing I know, I better know how to work it, really.
Yeah.
So I just use my personality to continue riding bikes and just focus more on projects and media rather than podium positions.
Yeah. I think that comes, I mean, these days, like, podium positions are almost secondary to what you can do in media. If you look at someone like Fabio Wibmer or Danny Mac, they can't win a competition, but they are gods online, you know. Like,
it'd be interesting to see, like, a contract, like their contracts, to sort of see what their goals are, what they have to do, you know, like, because... Yeah. My first contract was pretty simple. It was just turn up. Because that's what it was. Because you're on this team. Yeah. Just turn up, hang out, do some autograph signing, ride if you're fit.
Yeah.
And we would. But today, it must surely be all based on...
Yeah. I've always... I don't know what you've always thought, but I've always hated contracts. Because you have to get...
I like it because you're guaranteed that paycheck.
Yeah. I mean, God, as a rider, if you could get a 2-year deal with something, it was like, it was always my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was... Thank God.
Yeah,
and that's another thing as well, which I think is worth touching on, is like a lot of riders, even today, it's scary. The longer you get a contract for, the more at peace you are as a rider, because the last thing you want is like, well, all riders want a bit of cash. Yeah. Of course they do. Like, you want to ride for someone, you'd be like, right, okay, X amount. And if you can get it from everyone, it all sort of tallies up to a pretty good salary.
Yeah.
But that could be done in a year. And that year flies because you're having so much fun.
Yeah. And you're trying to, you set those goals of what you want to do at the start because you can't help but do that.
Yeah.
And then, then if it starts going well, you get super excited for October and things starting to talk about it. And if it's not going quite well, you're just desperate for something to go right.
And then you're doing a late email in December and being like, can you squeeze me on? Oh no, it was all done in August. Yeah. And you're like, no. And then that happens. It happens to everyone. And that's the scary bit about being a professional rider, unless you're part of a big team that pays big bucks, probably Tour de France or something. But mountain biking is a very small industry.
These days, I think it's like, I mean, it's completely different for road riders. Obviously, their contracts would be so different because they would be pointing at certain events. But I always used to feel like the contract sort of sucked a little bit of the magic out of it.
Yeah.
Because they started listing the things they expect.
Yeah.
And you start to realise what they see you for. Like, their expectation of, like, but you definitely will do these things because that's what we expect of you.
Yeah.
And you start realising what they... Not the people themselves, not the people in marketing or particularly, because there's usually really fabulous people in those roles, but what generally the system starts making you.
Yeah.
And you just become this thing that can generate.
They've bought into you, so you should effectively have a big say in your contract. And that's kind of what I've always done. Like, I've always said, include this then, include that, tweak a few things. So then I'm still happy and performing as well as why you wanted me in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as soon as you do start getting podium, like, we want you to place third, down to third place at least three or four times in the year, and you'll be like, Christ, mate. Like,
yeah, that's a good year.
Yeah.
that's a serious year you're putting together.
Oh, blimey. But yeah, it's things like that which can sort of set you back and maybe even crash again.
Yeah.
Because it's on your mind. You want a clear mind going into things. But yeah, contracts are interesting with sponsors.
It's quite interesting what you're saying, but like how the crash affected you coming back. I don't want to dwell on that too
much. I think that was me just being tired and just knowing that, right, this is the last jump.
It's
the last one. I'm going to chill. I'm flying home tomorrow. So that was a big old learning curve as well. Don't ride when you're tired, kids.
Yeah, no, don't.
Yeah.
And never say last one.
I know, but it wasn't. But in my head, I knew it was near the end, so I thought, right, I'm going to do a massive 360. I haven't done that before. And then it all went wrong.
Crazy. Right, I've got some proper questions for you here, right? Why chopper?
Oh, blimey. Why chopper? So, my name is Chopper because I spend most of my time in the air. it's just easier.
Is it that?
No, my brother used to call me a mixture of nicknames. It used to be called Snake, Jürgen, Jalopy, Granny, everything. And then Snake stuck for like 6 months. And then Apache was for like 3 months.
That one. Honestly, you wouldn't get away with that these days.
If you got inside mine and my brother's head, you'd last 5 minutes and you'd probably want to, I don't know, God knows what you want to do. But like, we're a bit wacky. And yeah, he just came up with Chopper. And that is literally how I got my name. You think it would be because I was a lumberjack or whatever, but nope, that is the genuine truth. Very boring.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy. What else we got here? Sorry, someone's at my front door.
Well, you've got to drive back.
Yeah.
Get back in series.
Let me see what's a good question here. I don't want to ask you a boring...
Cool app.
I don't want to ask you a boring bike question.
I don't.
I want to ask you... tell us about... Do you believe in aliens?
100%.
Do you?
Yeah.
Tell me about aliens.
Why did you ask me this?
I just didn't want to ask you a bike question.
Did you... Did you message my... Did you message Laura, my partner, or something?
No. No, did she ask you that? I promise I didn't, no.
Honestly, who have you asked about this?
No one, that's from my own mind.
Right, so no one knows about this, apart from the only other person who knows about my little interest is Tom Isted, right?
Yeah.
I am obsessed with, like, space and extraterrestrial life.
I honestly didn't know that. I didn't know you loved all that.
Unbelievable. It's 100%...
Mm.
I'd say 99.9% because I haven't actually seen anything, but
yeah.
I, from the information I've received and watched,
yeah,
received, like I'm, like I know.
People have let you know.
Yeah, they let me know.
But have they been here?
100%, yeah.
100% they've
I'm
been
gonna,
here?
I said 99.9, but I'm going to, actually, I'll stick with that just in case. But I do believe in aliens, yeah. Like, why not?
I believe in aliens, but I just don't, but I think the big question is, but are they looking? So have they been here? Because you have to start working out the timelines of civilizations.
I know, but you look at all the old biblical, if that's a word, like pictures and going back to like ancient Egypt and stuff, like they've scribed things into walls with like these phenomena coming into the sky, like UFOs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right, you look up to the sky at night, there is, what you see is just stars, right?
Yeah.
Behind that is billions more.
Yeah.
And each one is a sun, which is a part of their own galaxy.
Well, some of them are galaxies.
Yeah, exactly, which is insane.
Do you know what? I didn't expect you to have an opinion on this.
Yeah, so why?
I didn't realise you were going to rip
I know, but on. So why on Earth can't there be another, like, other life out there?
Oh, there's got to be another life. It's simple physics.
Like, and I've watched every single alien space documentary going.
I just said simple physics. That exists.
Well, it certainly does.
What I meant was, it's simply physics, chemistry, biology, isn't it? But
honestly, like, yeah, you've really, like, started something now. But
I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to swing this back to mountain biking? But I can do it with this next question.
Okay.
No, actually, this is not a mountain bike question. Tell me about... I don't know how to get you to talk about this.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about your question to me once I'd first had an accident.
Yeah, so I know where this is going, and I don't want to come across as that sort of nasty guy. I'm intrigued.
I don't think it makes you sound nasty. It's, I think it makes you sound like a fucking idiot. I'm going to tell the story.
You can tell the story.
You came up
to
me.
I like pushing boundaries.
We were at an event. We'd been walking around a bike show or something at the NEC. I don't think I was having a very good time of it then. I think I was just after my accident. I remember, I think maybe Clive Gosling rang me and said you'd spoke to him and said he didn't think I was doing very well.
Yeah.
And I was probably having a bit of a rough time.
Yeah.
But we'd walked around the bike show together and it was sort of over and we were, it was like a trade show. And we were in the quiet bit outside the hall and you come up to me and you sort of poked my leg. I said, so you can't feel anything?
Yeah.
Which is quite rude.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. And I went, no, nothing. And then this went through your mind, and you can never say it didn't actually, was an actual thought. You said, so you can't feel anything from the waist down? And I said, no, nothing.
Yeah.
And you went, I wonder if anyone's ever been disabled from the waist up.
Paralysed waist up.
And then you proceeded to act out what that might look like. This pair of legs wandering around with a floppy body.
Yeah, walking around with like a head on a roller boot. Just a pair of legs.
Head on a roller boot.
Yeah, and then just the arms dragging, just...
And I just remember looking and going, what? Just think that through for a moment.
I know. I know, and like, I do still feel to this day like, oh, I don't think I should have said that. But I know Martin well enough to get away with that. If anyone else would have said he might have lumped them.
It's a golden moment.
But I just, I'd probably say I'm kind of like the Dennis Penis of mountain bike, but I don't push it as much.
Dennis Penis was brilliant.
Yeah, he was a guy that used to take the mick out of celebrities,
everybody,
didn't he?
Yeah, I remember him actually going up to Hugh Grant in like a thing, and him saying, a lot of people refer to you actually as quite woody.
Quite woody, yeah.
And Hugh Grant just went, he sort of looks around the room and he goes, you can fuck off.
They say it was just like throwing a chair into the room.
Yeah, but he totally was.
Yeah,
like,
and he told him to do one, didn't he?
Dude, we have done over an hour,
so we
should probably stop.
Oh my goodness.
There's a lot of chopper we could get to, though.
Oh, yeah, we can go on forever. Yeah.
But I think now we've got to aliens and paralysed people from the waist up.
Oh, we could have gone on for a couple of days with aliens.
We probably reached.
Yeah.
The aliens, people have to let us know if they want to hear your alien theories. I do. I definitely do.
I've got quite a lot.
Although I think you're just like, they exit, that's it, 100%.
No, I'm not like really into into it. But I'm very intrigued, and I like the fact
that... Have you got a telescope?
My daughter has. Which I bought her.
Which you borrow now and again.
Which I use more
Where
than
are
her.
You?
Where are you?
Come on!
Come on! And then I get like a little wink from the moon and stuff. No, I'm very intrigued to why aliens would hover over nuclear bases. Like,
yeah, but we haven't got any proof that they have.
Yeah, I know, but
we've
it sounds
heard
good,
people say they did.
Yeah, well, just like humour me. Yeah, I think it's incredible, Matt. I did. I'm very intrigued with them. I might even go over and sort of hang out near Area 51 and just. That's look. See, this is how basic
you know what,
I am. That,
with it. That, I tell you what, I bet some great riding near there.
Oh, unbelievable! Yeah.
Imagine doing a really cool video, like a drop in of edit from like a line you've built at Area 51, or as close as you can get to it.
That would be incredible, wouldn't it?
That would be good.
And then, yeah, you'd probably get shot or something, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because it's not a. There was this guy
Bob
who found like what he believed was like a portal, right? And this could exist, right? So there was this door.
Could it?
There was this door in the like near Area 51 or whatever, and then their mates went to the exact place where they last saw him, or where he told him that where he was going, and the wall was just filled up by Area 51 lot. Mate, I didn't explain at all.
So he went through the door and he was just still where.
Well, they reckon he's just in another dimension. But that's why they say loads of planes go missing on the Bermuda Triangle.
Where is that exactly?
It's the triangle in Bermuda, right? So they fly through that and they just go missing. So there is you know, like you know when you put your thumb out in front of you and you're missing part of your thumb, right? Because that little blind spot. Well, that is like a teleport to another dimension, and that's where planes go. That's why they can never find them.
I absolutely was with you. Until that. You knew something at the start.
Yeah.
And now I'm 100% sure you don't. And on that note, let's call it a day.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure to be here.